Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Now our esteemed panel, the business panel, they're here. I told you about them earlier. They're here in the shape of Linda Daly, a business reporter with the Sunday Times, and Stephen O'Leary, the founder of Alitico. And they've been looking through the business stories of this morning's papers. Good morning to you both.
Morning, Bobby.
Stephen, there's only one show in town here, and this is Fuel. It's all over all the papers. We'll start with The Independent, because it's probably a good place to start. Diesel excise cuts and carbon tax bonus to break the deadlock. This has been a roller coaster week. The government are rattled. There's protesters out there, some of whom we don't know who they are. And it seems to be heading for some form of climax over the next couple of days.
Well, we hope so.
Yeah.
I think, to be honest, I mean, you know, the warnings that are coming out that if this rolls on more than another 24 to 48 hours of essentially not just fuel shortages, but no fuel, would suggest that really there isn't the time for this to go any further than this weekend. And if you want to get a sense, again, I mean, I think, you know, the entire country is obviously focused on this story. But the Indo have, I think, four of their journalists all contributing to their coverage on this piece today. And like you say, front page news right across the papers. I think what's really interesting is that throughout all the coverage and particularly that of maybe the negotiations last night, the piece that's on the front page in terms of imagery and the areas that are generating the most focus are very much the piece around the fuel terminals, the ports and the refineries.
Yeah.
At the crux of this, and it's been well discussed and covered, while the blockades in Dublin City, in the city centre, and on the M50 and the other motorways around the country have caused significant disruption and obviously huge concern, it's those fuel terminals that are at the centre of all of this. And that blockage and the fact that it was, you know, allowed to happen, that's at the crux of this. Because when again, the point has been well made, we have fuel, but it can't be distributed.
Yeah, and which means, and there's, you know, we have a situation where there's a tanker wanting to unload fuel, but the fuel reservoirs are already full, so that tanker potentially could be sent away.
I think the irony in this, and it's tragic, you know, but it is incredibly ironic, is that, you know, the Straits of Hormuz and the impact that is happening on the distribution of fuel globally has the entire world focused on where they're going to get their fuel from. And the key concern in the majority of countries around the world now is, are we going to be able to get fuel in? And we've got it, and we are well stocked, and we are in a really good position relative to some other countries, and yet we can't get it out of our port.
Yeah.
I mean, that is tragic.
Linda, let's look at some of the expected maybe initiatives from government to try and as I said earlier, the government are really rattled here.
Yeah.
But they have a couple of proposals. They keep saying we were coming with this anyway, you know, that they're trying to really undermine the far-right protesters here, and they're saying this is all in hand. But what sort of things are we likely to see them come out with now? Yeah. And in terms of what it's been said in here in The Independent.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's worth mentioning they did introduce a 250 million package in March. I suppose they took a slow approach to it. They reduced diesel the green diesel only by 3%, but other diesel by 12 or 15%, I think it was. So,
just to stop you there, but even that angered a certain cohort of people, because you had farmers and, you know, agricultural contractors who use this green diesel, insulted by a 3 cents.
Yeah.
So that's part of the problem here.
Yeah, I suppose, look, they saw it as too low, but then the government obviously had to offset its carbon tax. And we'll talk about Cliff Taylor's piece, which he makes a very good point about carbon tax and how that's used and how they can't really decrease it. But I suppose now, yeah, the government has to kind of perhaps be seen to be doing more. Like I saw on social media yesterday, it was shared that Australia cut its excise duty for the next 3 months by half. Now they had kind of around the same excise duty as us in Australian dollars versus euro. So in the Indo, they're talking about maybe that they will increase the rebate scheme. So
diesel rebate scheme.
So at the moment, taxpayers get 12% per litre on their rebate on the tax on the diesel. So if they increase that, maybe that might help. Although you would wonder if the protesters would be happy with anything other than what they've asked for.
We'll see. But also targeted measures for farmers. Which could include further relief in carbon tax on farm diesel, along with potential excise cuts. Like I think if they can sort of at least appease, you know, some of these key...
if they seem to be doing something.
Yeah. I think maybe there's a chance of aversion here.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose you might wonder, well, is it too little too late? You know, how's it going to affect prices? It's a global market. I would kind of think maybe the protesters should have gone over to Washington and protested against Donald Trump, but that's my opinion. It is a global market, but it will be interesting to see, because I read as well yesterday that if a tanker is staying in the port, it adds up to the cost. I think it was like 5,000 to 7,000 an hour. So, I mean, that's going to have to affect the pocket at some stage.
Stephen, the other side of this is that, you know, the government really can't be held to ransom by unrepresentative, you know, sort of disparate groups that no one really knows who they are. In other words, any fellow with an oil tanker, you know, and a grievance can basically hold the government to ransom. We can't have that.
No, but this is also why this is a tipping point, right? And the point was made, we heard it from the protesters when they talked about the importance of this moment, that the line was used, we're never going to get this chance again. And I was reflecting on, we work just off Fitzwilliam Square, and so I would cross up through Merrion Square and have done for 15, 20 years in terms of a commute. About a decade ago, on the first day of the Dáil term, you would walk up or drive up Merrion Square. There was no problem. There was no barriers. There was no fences up. And then there was those really angry scenes outside the Dáil in terms of protests that occurred. And everything changed. Now, on the first day of government, when you come to Merrion Square, the entire square is blocked off. You cannot travel up past government buildings on the first day of the Dáil. You can't travel up Kildare Street. And it's been that way ever since. This is a similar moment. What you're going to see is that when this is resolved, because it will have to be resolved in some way, there will be new plans put in place to ensure, whatever about protests in city centres and on motorways, that the ports and the oil refineries and where we get fuel in, it can just never happen again. And while it's great to be retrospective and look back, that's going to be the big learning here. The big learning is going to be, how do we ensure that we can never allow the access or the import or the fuel getting into the country to be blocked in the way it has been.
Yeah. And, you know, there's also been criticism of Jim O'Callaghan on, you know, using the, we're bringing in the army line and not actually doing it. So, like, and I understand that, you know, the government don't want to do that, but then just call it and not do it kind of leaves them in another vulnerable. It's another piece of this mess, really, let's call it.
Well, that's the other big learn. I mean, like, you talk about things that are going to be learned from this, the communication around this.
Which brings us on to this piece, which again, there's a, and I just, I'm intrigued, and it's a really good piece by Maeve McTaggart, how the spark of social media anger ignited a protest that halted the nation in its tracks. And maybe you might bring us through this, Stephen, because, you know, I think it's fascinating that this whole communique around social media can mobilise all these people, information can be targeted at certain groups, but just the speed and power of this, let's call it a revolution, but it was really carried out through social media.
Yeah, so look, this is our day job. Our day job is listening to what people talk about publicly on the internet, and we talk all the time. And I think the frustrating piece for us is it means the element of surprise or unknown here just doesn't stand up. Like last Thursday and Friday, it became evident that something was going to happen. Now, I think it's very fair to say that the scale of the protests were hard to predict. But if you had been paying attention to what was happening publicly on social media, this wasn't a hidden thing. This wasn't some sort of secret cabal, right, done in the undergrounds and sent via like Telegram messages. This was happening. The anger was evident, and the talks of protest, peaceful protest, were being discussed. Now, I think, and Maeve has a really excellent piece, and I would recommend reading it in the Indo today on this. She talks about then how it spreads and how it goes from the maybe one centralized group into lots of disparate groups. Then the control over who's organizing obviously kind of dissipates, but also how then other groups, you mentioned the far right earlier and others, just jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
And suddenly you start seeing misinformation, disinformation. She gives the example of the drive up to your forecourts at 8 p.m. and turn off your cars. Those kind of things did occur. Now, the impact of those, we didn't see any widespread element of that kind of actually coming to fruition, but it absolutely shows, and I think it's the frustrating thing here, is this was preventable. Not in its entirety. Protests would have occurred, disruption would have occurred, but the idea that the government didn't know that something was going to happen, regardless of whether it was the Easter weekend or not, just does not stand up.
Okay.
You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you may not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. Visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
And just to quote one piece of her article, but that's the what's different nowadays in the digital age is the speed and scale at which false claims can spread without any kind of substantiation of the veracity of those claims.
Yeah, and we saw this. I mean, the CCPC came out this week, and I think it was excellent, again, to kind of hear this being brought out, but around the price gouging piece. Because one of the things that was being put forward as an element of anger was this perception that forecourts were price gouging their customers and that they were inflating prices in reaction to what was happening in the Middle East and that, you know, it was consumers that were absolutely suffering. But the CCPC came out really strongly on this, and they looked at it and they said, there is no evidence of this. And they are an independent body who were able to do that. So there were groups who took steps to try and also correct and address some of the misinformation or disinformation.
The algorithm drives anger, you know.
But the other thing is, it's hard to, what do you believe these days?
I know.
Like, really?
Well, I think as well with social media, and I suppose a lot around the debate in this, I think it's lacking a lot of nuance, you know. And as you can see in Cliff Taylor's piece, which in the Irish Times today.
Bring us through that if you would, Linda.
So look, I mean, he's talking about the economy of fuel prices, and he's saying, you know, the government's flush with cash. It didn't perhaps kind of act quick enough, but he can see why it didn't, you know, was kind of wanting to see where the land lay and how everything was going to go. But just say for carbon tax, okay? So the protesters want carbon tax gone completely, right? Now, my parents have benefited from the retrofit scheme in their house. They had people come in, they live in Crumlin, they had new heating system, a window put in, the attic insulated, the outside of the house insulated. That is all paid for by carbon tax. And lots of people know people who have had their houses retrofitted through that scheme.
So it's 1.1 billion a year comes in
from carbon taxes. So you can say, well, we can get rid of carbon tax. But then if you get rid of carbon tax, you might have to get rid of the retrofit scheme. And that's how people need to look at this thing. It's not just as simple as cut everything out. If something goes, something else has to go.
Likewise, if you lower excise on fuel, the government will need to at least pick some of it up somewhere else.
And it is, people, taxpayers will pay for it ultimately. Yeah. And I suppose that's what there is kind of, you have to kind of look down and see what happens. It's not just as simple as the government's taking our money and we should act now and it's our, people need to take over and get rid of Fianna Fáil and get rid of Fine Gael. You know, it shouldn't be about politics, but people need to, social media does not, it just doesn't accept nuance. It's, you're either right or wrong, or like, you know, right or left as well. And they both have met in the middle somewhere in this debate as too, which is really interesting. But yeah, I think it's worthwhile to read Cliff Taylor's piece, because you do get to see kind of, you know, about, and you know, it's quite balanced as well. He's pointing out the hauliers are under pressure too, and farmers, and obviously, like, it has caused a lot of anger.
Okay, well, I'm going to be talking to Cormac Lucy a bit later on in the show. I think he's down on O'Connell Street having a look at the protests and what's happening down there. So he's going to come in and maybe give us some analysis of protest versus result. And again, looking back historically at, you know, French farmers burning sheep on the motorways and all that sort of stuff.
French do this regularly, yeah. I suppose.
So, yeah. Okay, well, we'll move on from that. There's a few other stories around the cost of settling insurance, Stephen. The claims rose by 3% last year. It's 6% lower, 17% down in 2020, but premiums don't seem to be coming down.
Yeah, I
that's
think,
the nutshell of this story.
Well, your litany of percentages there, right, underscores the challenge of this story, and also like the power of a headline, right? Because if you read this story in the Irish Independent today by John Burns, you'd actually probably have some sympathy for the insurers, right? Because cost of settling insurance claims rose by 3% last year, a new report says. So, poor insurers. You read the same story from Ian Curran in the Irish Times, and the headline is unjust that Irish insurers are not passing on savings to customers. So you get these.
What do you want to hear?
What do you want to hear? Right? I mean, like, that is
social
that
media.
Is genuinely what this comes down to. There is something for everybody in the audience. It's like, I think there's a lot of nuance to this story, and I appreciate the complexity too of maybe reporting on this, because, you know, there's a myriad of different numbers that are quoted, and there are lots of different percentages. I think if you boil it down, while the cost or the percentage increase over the first 6 months of this year relative to the previous year is up, it's the context that when you go back further to pre-COVID levels where you're really seeing it come down. And I think that's where the anger stems from. That yes, they're up marginally recently, but they're down so much relative to, you know, 6 years ago, that there is an anger amongst those who are looking for insurance that we're not seeing the trickle-down effect.
And it's one industry where the punter always plays.
I mean, you never ring.
The costs always find their way to the end consumer.
Nobody rings to renew their insurance and gets told it's going lower, do they? So, no. And I suppose really what Insurance Ireland is saying is that one of the reasons for the high costs is litigation. So the government
introduced... The lawyers, the lawyers.
The government introduced the injury, the Personal Injuries Board. Only 15% of cases are seen through that. The rest go to the courts, you know. But then the Alliance for Insurance Reform, you know, and they're the ones who are kind of given the prominence in Ian Curran's piece. You know, they're saying, well, look, the government have put in initiatives. They are working. It's the insurance industry that isn't perhaps fulfilling its part of the bargain. So,
Stephen, all the things we talked about earlier, maybe sort of playing into our next piece, which is about Cantillon telling us that new figures suggest that the switch to electric vehicles is accelerating.
Yeah.
And I think another couple of days like we've had, and they may accelerate further.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the last line here where he talks about the, you know, the rising fuel prices have clearly been influencing car choices. But this is another piece where there is so many statistics and percentage changes. But this is a bit easier, because they are all going in
the same
direction, right? Doesn't matter how you look at this, it is evident that EVs are becoming increasingly popular. And not just increasingly popular, they are now overtaking petrol and diesel in terms of total volume sold. So, like, to quote some of the numbers, almost 12,000 EVs were sold over the 3-month period, the first 3 months of the year. With petrol cars at 10,800 and diesel trailing at 6,700. So you can see starkly there the popularity of electric vehicles. But it's when you look at the percentage changes that you can see how rapid this is becoming. Right. So again, if you look at the number of EVs registered for the first time in March, rose 39% compared to the same month in 2025. Petrol and diesel, on the other hand, fell by 10% and 19% respectively. So these are really significant year-on-year changes. And I would think what we've seen over the last week is only going to accelerate the adoption
and
change.
Another one there is the market share from 17 up to 23. Mm. Again, all going the right way. Linda, I don't know if you've noticed the amount of saunas around the place, but we've 240 of them plus the number of saunas in Ireland established from the post-COVID years. I know in my area around Sandy Cove, I think there's four of them.
Yeah.
All playing off the dry robbers coming out of the sea. but it is an interesting business, and it's nice to see a kind of a new sector emerging.
Yeah.
And this is all part of wellness, etc.
It is, yeah. And in the Indo today, Keith Kelly and Sarah O'Mahony have a good piece just around the price of them and which province has the most expensive. It's most expensive to do the sauna. Look, I've spoken to loads of people who they're obsessed with these saunas now. I can't believe that they're sold in 45-minute blocks, because I can't spend more than 5 minutes in a sauna without having to leave.
They're not my thing either, I have to say. But
the good news for people in Munster is it's the cheapest place to get a sauna. So it's 15 euro.
And Connacht is the most expensive at 18.
Yeah.
I think there's an interesting build here on the insurance piece from earlier, though, because at the very end, they talk about operators recalling costs of up to 17,500 4 years ago. Mm. Average price is now down at roughly 4,900. Like that is absolutely
fallen by
connected.
Two-thirds.
Huge drop.
Stephen, when I have you there, I know you follow the golf. What do you make of Rory McIlroy's sort of gastro screw up?
Yeah, you know, we give out when our sports stars are bland and give us the old generic talking points, and then suddenly we get a bit of colour and McIlroy is kind of on the chopping block. I heard this, you know, for anyone who maybe doesn't know, the past champion at the Masters essentially sets the menu for the champions dinner the following year. So McIlroy, having won last year, had the honour of doing it this year, chose a really interesting mix of food. But no real strong Irish theme to it.
And oh, Jesus. No Irish butter.
No, and he probably exasperated things a little bit because he says, people keep asking me, why didn't you go more Irish? And I said, because I want to enjoy the dinner as well. Now, you know, he probably, I'm sure if he had his time over, would have chosen slightly different words. But the good news is he has a 6-shot lead after the first 2 days. So I think there's every chance he's going to be setting the menu in 2027. And you can be sure there'll be more Irish produce on the menu.
He's obviously had far too many Ulster fries in his day, Linda. Yeah. Tell us, Linda, the small things that really wind us up. Now, there are a few. Maybe you might bring us through it. This is in today's Irish Mail.
Yeah.
These are things that really just piss you off.
In a survey which was sponsored by Chupa Chups, who, if anybody hasn't eaten one of them in a long time, they're the lollipops. So they're trying to find what really winds us up, okay? So the top three are, what amplifies irritation is tiredness, being late, and hunger. So maybe that's where the Chupa Chups came in. Maybe you have one of those and might alleviate your hunger. For me, maybe there's a lot of these things that might irritate me. Queue jumping, if you see somebody jump a queue.
Despicable behaviour.
Yeah, loud chewing. I definitely have a bit of misophonia, I think. So playing videos loudly without headphones. Being late, I'm guilty of that. So I can't say that annoys me. Putting feet on public transport. Stubbing your toe. Well, it's not going to get
annoyed. That's one that really resonates with me. And I did it last week. And it always happens about 3 o'clock in the morning. When you can't see.
Yeah.
I think, though, really, if these are your worries and concerns, you don't have any
worries or
concerns. That's how you can summarise the list.
But men who leave the toilet seat up now, we should really discuss that one. Because
Stephen O'Leary is guilty of that.
Very, yes.
There's a lot, you know. Chipping a fingernail. It's very women orientated, probably, to be sexist. And cryptic social media posts. You know, somebody puts up, I'm so depressed, and they don't explain why. Or, you know, what I really despise is if somebody says, my daughter did very well in her leaving cert. I'm like, tell us what she got, you know.
I want all the information.
That's
the journal.
It is.
Stephen, last word to you. Anything that irritates you on this list?
Yeah, like I think the kind of usual kind of things are there. I think the thing that does give me a bit of panic is your phone suddenly out of charge. I think that feels very relatable. When that happens in a hurry, there is really this kind of element, how did I let that happen?
All right, well, listen, thanks for a great review of the business stories, Linda Daly and Stephen O'Leary. Enjoy your weekend and thanks for coming in bright and early, folks.
Thanks, Bobby.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.